Welcome back to Hunter Logan Unmiked. I'm Hunter Logan, and I'm going to get right into it. I just did episode 10, and I'm redoing it because I can't air it. It was too much. And let me apologize now. It's too much. When I say it's too much, my wife said, don't bring up too much about the marriage and the stuff we went through. And I wasn't going to do it. I was going to respect her wishes and not do that. But even some of the stuff, just some of the stuff on the outside, I just don't even want to go into it. I don't care to even relive any of it, to be quite honest with you. That's a part of my life that's over. God has delivered me from all of that. I don't care for her to relive any of it as well. I don't care for her to be reminded of any of it. I don't care for my kids to be reminded of any of it. Let me just make this statement, though. If there's any of you out there chasing the dream, if there's any of you out there chasing the dream, understand this, it's not worth it. Even if you think that you'll make it up on the back end, you're going to sacrifice it now, fooling yourself. There's not enough money to make it up. There's not enough money that you won't make it up. You can't buy back time. You can't buy back time with your kids. You can't buy back time with your wife or your husband if you're female. You can't buy back those years with your kids. I'm telling you, it is not worth it. So what I'm going to do instead, I'm just going to talk about the band portion of it and the failed attempts and a few of the things that happened along the way. And we'll just keep it there. So I know some of you are probably wanting to hear some of the other stuff, but listen, just understand that God did a miracle in our marriage. And chasing the music dream, like I told you in the last episode, putting the music first caused a path of destruction that our marriage liked to not come back from. And it's only God who healed it and brought us back. And I don't care to open up any of it or be reminded of any of it. It's dead and gone, and it's going to stay that way. And that is that. So I'm playing in bands, and I told you in 1994, that's when Hunter Logan came about. So I took the name of my son, my youngest son. But originally, I was going to be called Logan Hunter. I was just going to reverse the name because my son's name is Hunter Logan Self. That's his first middle name. I was just going to do Logan Hunter. And my first manager said, nah, it flows better if you say Hunter Logan. It just flows better. And he was right, because even though people had never met me, they say, Hunter Logan. Oh, yeah, yeah. And they would think that they had met me, or they would think that it sounds familiar. And about that time, Hunter Hayes, he's a little guy playing the accordion. Same Hunter Hayes that's the country star now. But he started out around here playing the accordion. He was a little novelty act at the time. But really good. But he was cute, blonde-haired, little boy playing accordion and singing and, I mean, now he's a mega country star in his own right. But they would, you know, sometimes people would say, oh, Hunter Hayes. I was like, no, Hunter Logan. But they would, it would sound to people like, oh, yeah, yeah. And sometimes they'd say Hunter Hayes, but it was like, no, I'm a little older, like too old to be Hunter Hayes. But it had that sound, Hunter Logan. It just sounded familiar. So in 94, I started just with the Hunter Logan thing. That would be the start of getting to the point of going through a lot of different bands, like I said. And that's when I started to feature myself. I really just was going to be a guitar player. And that's all I ever was in the bands. I never was the lead guy. I never was the front guy. I never was. And remember the last episode I told you I played in an all-girl band. It was a lesbian band. And at that time, you could say that. I mean, that's what they referred to them. They said, we're gay or we're lesbians. It wasn't, you could say that. And it wasn't politically incorrect at the time. But that was a weird experience because here I am in a room or a bar full of women. And there's some very good looking, attractive women. But there's some women in there that look more masculine than I do. And I'm like, wow. And those women would fight at the drop of a hat. You look at one of those girls wrong. That's my woman. And they would start to scrapping. And I'm like, whoo, man. Like, dudes don't even fight that quick. I mean, they would fight quick. I was like, wow. But that was kind of really, it's hard. It was demasculating almost because it was just weird for me as a heterosexual. It was just it wasn't normal. But me and the drummer really hit it off. And we stayed friends and we're still friends, still good friends. So when I put my first band together, she became my drummer. But I would be in a different band before that. And what had happened was, now, this is when I'm just getting bands and I'm making $50 a gig. And I might be able to get two or three gigs a week if I'm lucky. Now, my wife is having to go to work. We're basically living off government assistance. Food stamps, I guess you'd call it. We have WIC for the baby. I'm basically doing odd and end jobs when I can find it. Playing in the bars and drinking. You know, that always comes with drinking a free bar. So I'm still drinking. That ain't slowed down at all. I'm just drinking. And I love to drink. I just love the taste of alcohol, period. But I was always a social. I knew when to stop because I knew when my limit was because I didn't want to wake up with a hangover. So I knew when to stop. And I didn't drink all kinds of stuff. I had two things that I drank, Wild Turkey and 7 and Heineken. And those, I stuck to that. I didn't drink anything else. If all that was available was Budweiser or light beer, anything like that, I wouldn't drink. If they had VO or Crown Royal, any kind of blended whiskey or white liquor, I wouldn't drink. I just wouldn't drink. I stuck to what I drank. That's the kind of drinker I was, but I loved the taste of alcohol. I mean, I loved the taste of Wild Turkey. I loved the taste of Heineken. Did. Anyway, I'm drinking and playing, not making much. But this guy... We get into it. And he's the main singer. I'm just a lead guitar player. I sing a song or two. That's all I've ever done in bands. Never the front guy. He was getting ready to go to Nashville and record. I said, you're going to go to Nashville, record. You're going to come back with your tail tucked between your legs. You're going to have to start working a regular job. And I said, I'm going to have a CD out. I'm going to be doing this full time. And when I get my first CD out, I'll call you up and I'll invite you to my CD release party. And I'll give you a front row seat. And I probably flipped him off or something and we parted ways. Well, a couple of years later, I put together Hunter Logan and the Tailgaters. That was the band. And my first CD, 1998. It came out. Put it together in 1998. I think CD came out in 1999. Boogie in the Swamp, I believe it was. 98, 99, somewhere around there. And sure enough, I said, oh, I got to call that dude. And I found out that he did go to Nashville. And he did have to come back. And he was working for the telephone company. So his dream to go to Nashville and make it got squashed. He's working for the telephone company. And me, you know what I did? I called him up, got his number, called him up. I said, hey, brother. I said, hey, man, I just wanted to invite you to my CD release party Friday night. I said, I want you to come on out, man. I got a front seat for you. And click. Yeah, that's the kind of guy I was. Click. But I told him. And that's when I really started being the front guy. So it was Hunter Logan and the Tailgaters was the band. And then I realized, you know, it's always going to be Hunter Logan and the Tailgaters. So it doesn't matter who the band is. Hunter Logan's always going to be up front. So that's when I came up with the rule. It's my way or the highway. As far as bands go. So I would tell the band, listen, I'll listen to what you say. Everybody can say what they want. But there's only one rule. It's my way or the highway. Because I'm the one that's paying you. And if you don't like it, it's a free country. You're free to leave. And that's what I would tell them when I'd hire them. Now, a lot of them like to go on break and smoke pot. I didn't have a problem with that. As long as they could come back and play, it was all right with me. As long as you could play, I didn't care. A lot of guys would hire, or if they would just come on, or if they were just filling in, they're like, is Hunter cool? Is Hunter cool? He ain't smoking with us. It's like, Hunter don't smoke, but he's cool. He ain't gonna do nothing. He's fine. This is just not his thing, man. He likes to drink. And I remember that. They would like, he's all right. He said, look, as long as you can play, you'll be fine. And that's how I ran the band. And that's what we did for a good while. Had this little bar on 4th Street, Marrero. It was called Feisty's Cajun Tavern. It was a hole in the wall. But it was a place where we played all the time, started learning chops. Built up a crowd, a following, a fan club. And we raised the money to do our first CD there called Boogie in the Swamp. So it was here that we got nominated for an award. It would be my first ever award for Offbeat Magazine. It'd also be here that I'd start carrying a big chip on my shoulder as well. That I would carry for quite some time. Now, I remember in a few episodes back, I told you that I wrote my stepdad and apologized to him for all the stuff I did and the way I treated him, right? Now, understand something. Me and my stepdad, we're fine. And all this stuff is all water under the bridge. I mean, I call him up. I need him. He's here. He's done more for me than my real dad. Far as doing stuff. Helping me with the studio. And of course, my real dad is disabled. But I mean, before he was disabled, like I said, he was stuck with the other lady and stuff. And it's all in those other episodes. But anyway. When I'm saying stuff, you got to understand that I'm just referring to stuff for historical value, I guess. I'm just reference. But when I got back, I joined this club. Y'all might have heard of it, called the Masons, the Freemasons, because my stepdad was in it. My grandfather was one. And so I was in there. I became the secretary of the lodge there under my dad, my stepdad. And they had, I think it was some kind of event. I don't know what it was. It was a pretty big event, but a gig had fell at the same time, something I had to do with the band. And I wasn't going to make it. And he really got upset about that. And I remember him making the statement. He says, "I don't know why you're worried about going. You should be here. You're never going to be any better than just playing in the backyard at a barbecue." And when he said that, I'm like, forget this, man. Forget all of it. I don't want none of this. Of course, I went and did my gig, and that caused some problems for us a little bit for a while. When I got my award for Best New Folk Country Performer, I got interviewed by television station, cable show. They were doing interviews. Of course, they're interviewing me, and I said, "I'd like to dedicate this award to everyone who said, keep my day job." Of course, I made a little smart aleck face to go along with it. And that was a jab at some people. Because here again, the whole time I'm doing this, right? The whole time I'm working at this music thing, my side of the family is not agreeing with this. And it's like, you should be working a regular job. You should be taking care of your family, not out here doing what you're doing. And to a degree, they were really correct. I should have been doing what I was doing way back when, not now. And it's not that what I was doing was wrong. It was probably at the time I was doing it was wrong. The ironic thing, though, about this is this would happen again when we get to the darker years. We're in the dark years right now. But this same thing is going to happen again, not with my family. But this same thing is going to kind of happen again when we start the radio station. So when we get to that point, you'll see what I'm saying. We'll get to that. But that becomes part of my testimony. So going back to where we're at, here with the music and everything, immediately after that statement, I got a big chip on my shoulder that I'm carrying around now. So now I'm more determined now more than ever to show everyone. Remember, it started with the guy I got into it with. I said, "I'll show you. I'll have a CD out and I'll invite you to my CD release party," which that's what happened. And then we won the award. It's full steam ahead now, because now I got a little validation for some folks. So now I feel validated with my music. Now I'm validated for being out in the front. So I'm like, okay, but maybe I can do this. And remember that letter from my uncle that he sent me when I was in Germany. I've never forgot about that letter. He said I could do it for a living. I really believe that. That letter to me was powerful because I really believed that I could do it when he said that. So I am full steam ahead after winning the award. I meet up with this friend of mine that I'd met earlier on. We've kind of stayed in contact. He's my dad's age, actually. But very wise in the music business, had a great reputation because back in the day, in the Urban Cowboy days, he played with one of the biggest names around, and he had a big following. He's a great guitar player. And he was doing a solo act with sequences. And I was against sequences. I'm like, no band in the box for me. It will only be live music, period. And they had this late night club that would start at 1 o'clock in the morning. It was 1 to 5. It was called Faze Lounge. It was on the West Bank Expressway in Marrero, right before the tunnel. Well, he says, why don't you come help me out? And he said, I'll pay you $100. And I'm like, what? He said, yeah, man, just if come. He said, I know you don't like the sequence thing, but just come play guitar with me and sing a few songs. And he said, I'll pay you $100. Well, $100 is more than what I'm making because I'm only getting $50 after paying the band. And I still get to drink free too, so that was cool. That was always a requirement. I got to drink free when I play. I had to drink free when I play. That was a requirement. I go and do it. And I'm like, it's not so, it's different, you know. But I sing the songs. The $100 was good, though. I mean, no tear down, no attitude, $100, free booze. He said, I'm actually just filling in for a guy. He said, but I got to do this the rest of the week. You want to do it? I'm like, one, two, three. That would be three more $100. Oh, yeah, I want to do it. So I did. And it got easier. I started looking at it, man, watching what he was doing. And then I realized, wait, you could do your own songs here. Like, you can program your own songs. You can make them. You can. And I'm like, And that got me to thinking. I'm like, if you can make $400 or $300 by yourself, and as opposed to having to make, you know, $50 by the time you pay everybody, you don't have to deal with attitudes. You don't have to worry about people showing up on time, teaching them songs. There's a lot of advantages. Of course, it's not live, but you're going to play live along with it, and you're animated enough that you can keep their attention. And you're a little bit better than a DJ because you're more animated, but you're cheaper than a live band. And if you do it well enough, you could probably pull $300 or $400 every time you play. Play enough, you make pretty good at it. Let me think about this. That's exactly what I did. So I ended up getting rid of the band and going to the sequence myself and doing a solo gig to where I played sequence and just guitar along with the sequencer. Now, keep in mind, I'm working a 60-hour a week job back at Acme Truck Line again, full time. I'm only staying at these places for 2 years at a time. Here I am, working Acme Truck Line, 60 hours a week, playing about 3 to 4 nights a week. And I'm making more money playing 3 to 4 nights a week at 4 hours, counting the weekends, you know. I'm making more money cash than I'm making working 60 hours a week, all week long. But the problem is the music's interfering with the regular job, and the regular job's interfering with the music. And my boss comes to me and says, hey, this ain't working out. You're going to have to do one or the other. You're either going to have to cut back on the music so you can pay attention to your job, or you're going to have to just go play music. Well, you know what happened next. I sure did. I wrote my letter of resignation. Turned it in. Here's your 2 weeks, buddy. I'm sure my wife was like, oh, here we go again. Here we go again. And don't you know, as soon as I gave that resignation letter, all those gigs I had lined up just pretty much went away. So I had to get busy finding more gigs. But I did. I found more gigs. But that's when I realized I could play wherever I wanted to. It didn't matter. I could play all over. And that's when I said, you know what? I'm moving back to Jennings. She said, why Jennings? I said, because it's home. My wife is the best. Why? God bless that woman. God knew I would need her, because I don't know any other woman that would put up with what she put up with. I really don't. I love that woman. I love her so much. She's the best thing that has ever happened to me. And God knew that. Even when I didn't know it, God knew that. And he knew that we'd be doing ministry side by side one day. And that's the thing that blows my mind the most, that we're here together every morning, every day, working side by side for him, reaching souls for the kingdom. And that's the beauty of it. We just continue on playing music, moving. But we would move to Jennings and we would stay. Next episode, when we come back, I'm going to talk about being on the road and traveling and playing and getting to Branson, on to Nashville, on the Carnival Cruise Lines, and then getting back into church where the darker years start. I think that's where we'll go. Now, I know I left out quite a bit that I was going to talk about, but we got to get to where we are now. So I'm going to leave you right there. Go ahead, tell some folks about Hunter Logan Unmiked. Also, check out HLE Radio. Tell some folks about that. We do a live morning show every morning, me and my wife, Hunter and Roy, in the morning, 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday. Always playing great Christian country music. This podcast is available on our website and everywhere podcasts are available. Till next time, I'll see you.